Right now, I mean, literally right now, millions of people are sitting at kitchen tables or, massive mahogany desks at a bank, and they're signing their names to 30-year
Oh,
mortgages.
yeah, just staring down that giant stack of paper.
Exactly, a stack thicker than a phone book. And they are obsessing over the interest rate, sweating the closing costs, but completely unaware that the underlying machinery of the loan they've chosen might actually dictate whether they can ever afford to retire.
It's a profoundly overwhelming moment for almost everyone.
Right, you're finalizing the absolute biggest financial decision of your life.
Yeah, and we get so fixated on just getting the keys today, just crossing that immediate finish line.
Just get me into the house, please.
Exactly. But in doing that, we overlook how the specific structure of the loan is quietly mapping out our financial reality for decades to come.
That hits the nail on the head. And that is exactly our mission for this deep dive. We are going to cut through all that dense, heavy banking jargon and give you a clear-eyed, practical understanding of the critical choice at the center of buying a house.
The choice between a conventional loan and an FHA loan.
Exactly. And we're pulling our insights today from a really comprehensive breakdown provided by Jet Direct Mortgage. They're a lender based out in Bohemia, New York.
Right, handling markets all across the country.
Yeah, but specifically navigating the really intense real estate landscapes of places like Long Island and New York City.
And their materials highlight something crucial, I think. Choosing a mortgage isn't just a simple hurdle you clear to get into a house. It's a complex long-term equity strategy.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because before we even look at the dollars and cents or the monthly payments, we have to understand the fundamental philosophy of these two loans.
Right, because the entire system comes down to who is standing behind the curtain.
Who is actually backing the money?
Exactly. It's basically a tale of two entirely different systems. You've got government insurance on one side versus private underwriting standards on the other.
Let's start with FHA loans. What are we actually talking about here?
So FHA stands for the Federal Housing Administration,
Yeah.
and they operate under HUD, which is the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development.
Right.
When you get an FHA loan, the mortgage is actually insured by the federal government.
Wait, hold on. The government isn't lending you the money directly, though, right? Like a bank or a private lender, like Jet Direct, is still the one giving you the actual cash to buy the house.
Yes, exactly. The lender gives you the capital,
Yeah.
but the government provides a massive insurance policy to that specific lender.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. So if you default on the loan, say you lose your job and stop paying, the FHA steps in and protects the lender from taking a catastrophic loss. What's fascinating here is why the government does this.
To keep the housing market moving.
Partially, yeah. By acting as a safety net, the federal government heavily incentivizes private lenders to expand access to homeownership.
Okay, that makes sense.
It encourages banks to offer loans to buyers who might otherwise be completely locked out of the market because of strict risk algorithms.
So that government shield totally changes the bank's entire risk calculus.
Completely.
Now, contrast that with a conventional loan, which feels like a totally different animal.
It really is.
Yeah.
Conventional loans operate without that federal insurance backing. They are firmly rooted in the private sector.
So no HUD safety net.
Right. Instead of HUD, they follow strict guidelines established by federally chartered but functionally private entities, specifically Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac.
And those are regulated by the FHFA, right? The Federal Housing Finance Agency.
You got it.
I have to pause you right there, though. Who actually are Fannie and Freddie? Because I always thought, my loan was just with the local bank down the
Think you
street.
most people think.
Yeah. I walk in, they give me money, I pay them back for 30 years. Why do these other massive agencies even matter?
It's a common assumption, but it's really just the tip of the iceberg of how housing finance works. Your local bank or lender originates the loan.
Meaning they do the paperwork and hand over the initial funds?
Right. But they rarely hold on to that loan for 30 years. I mean, doing so would tie up all their cash.
Oh, true. They'd run out of money to lend.
Exactly. Instead, they sell your mortgage on what is called the secondary mortgage market. Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac are these massive entities buying up these mortgages.
Which replenishes the local lender's cash so they can go make more loans to other families.
Bingo.
Ah, I see. So because Fannie and Freddie are the ultimate buyers of these debts, they're the ones who get to set the rules.
You've captured the core tension perfectly. Because Fannie and Freddie have no government safety net catching them if a borrower fails to pay, they demand incredibly strict, rigorous standards for the loans they're willing to buy.
They will not buy a risky loan.
Never. Therefore, the local lender won't approve a risky borrower because they know they'll be stuck with the debt.
I was thinking about how to visualize this difference in risk, and well, it feels a bit like bowling.
Bowling.
Yeah, think about it. Getting an FHA loan is like bowling with the bumpers up. The government is covering the gutters.
Oh, I like that.
Right. So the bank, the bowling alley in this scenario, is willing to let you roll the ball, even if your stance is a little wobbly or your form isn't perfect. They know the ball isn't going in the gutter.
Because the insurance catches it.
Exactly. But conventional loans. That is standard league play bowling. The bumpers are down. Yeah. If you want to play on that lane, you better have the financial technique to keep it out of the gutter yourself, because absolutely no one is saving you.
That is a highly accurate way to look at the barrier to entry for these two paths. Because those FHA bumpers are up, the gateway to getting approved is designed around maximum flexibility.
To help people who wouldn't meet the strict criteria.
Exactly. It was intentionally created for that.
Let's bring this into the real world, though. How do those bumpers actually manifest when you are sitting in the loan officer's chair? We're talking about credit, debt, and, you know, the cash you have to bring to the table.
For FHA, that flexibility shows up immediately in the credit score requirement.
It's much lower, right?
It is. FHA guidelines allow lenders to consider borrowers with a very limited credit history or even significant past financial hardships.
Like a previous bankruptcy or something.
Yeah, or a foreclosure, provided enough time has passed. They are evaluating the borrower with a much more forgiving lens. They also allow for a significantly higher debt-to-income ratio, or DTI.
Just to clarify for anyone taking notes, DTI is the percentage of your gross monthly income that is already eaten up by other debt obligations.
Right. Things like student loans, car payments, minimum credit card payments.
Okay, so give me an example of how this plays out.
Let's imagine a hypothetical buyer named Sarah. Sarah makes a solid income, let's say $70,000 a year, but she carries a hefty $800 a month student loan payment.
Ouch. Yeah, her DTI is inherently high then.
Exactly. A conventional loan algorithm might look at Sarah's profile and just reject her flat out, viewing that existing debt burden as too risky without the bumpers.
But the FHA?
The FHA looks at Sarah and says, well, her DTI is high, but we have insurance, so we will approve her.
Wow. And beyond the monthly debt, there's a massive hurdle of upfront cash.
Yeah, FHA loans generally require a much smaller initial financial contribution, often as low as 3.5% down.
That's huge for first-time buyers.
It is. Furthermore, they allow you to use eligible gift funds toward your entire upfront cost.
Wait, the whole thing?
The whole thing. So if a family member wants to help Sarah with the down payment, FHA is incredibly accommodating to that transfer of wealth.
Meanwhile, over on the conventional side, Sarah is staring down a completely different reality.
Very different. Conventional loans expect an established, proven credit history and very consistent payment behavior. They demand lower debt-to-income ratios.
And more cash.
Traditionally, yes, they require a larger upfront cash contribution. Now, to be fair, some conventional programs do offer reduced upfront options for highly qualified buyers based on income limits or specific locations.
But generally speaking, it's tougher.
Generally speaking, the entry requirements are vastly stricter. You have to prove you can bowl a strike without the bumpers.
Okay, I have to push back here for a second. If I'm Sarah, and I see that the FHA loan allows me to have a lower credit score, carry my student debt without penalty, and bring way less of my own hard-earned cash to the closing table.
Why wouldn't you just choose FHA?
Yeah. Why on earth would anyone volunteer to endure the strictness of a conventional loan?
It is the absolute most important question you can ask. And the answer is that the conventional loan rewards a stronger upfront financial profile with vastly more favorable long-term structures.
So there's a catch to the FHA.
FHA's accessibility is incredible, but it comes at a significant permanent cost later on. You are essentially paying a premium for the privilege of using those bumpers.
Okay, I see.
But before we even get to the long-term math of that cost, the strictness of a conventional loan doesn't just apply to your wallet. It actually applies to the physical house you are trying to buy.
Oh, right. Here's where it gets really interesting. Because the type of money you use actually dictates what kind of property you are allowed to purchase.
Exactly. Let's start with intended use. FHA loans are strictly, categorically, for primary residences only.
You actually have to live there.
You must intend to live in the house. The government is utilizing taxpayer-backed insurance to help citizens secure housing, not to help investors build lucrative rental portfolios.
That makes total sense. But conventional?
Conventional loans offer total flexibility. You can use them for a primary residence, a second vacation home, or a dedicated investment property.
Okay, but even if you are buying a primary residence, the physical condition of the house is scrutinized completely differently, right?
Mm-hmm.
FHA appraisals are notorious in the real estate world for being rigorous.
Oh, they are. An FHA appraisal isn't just checking the market value of a neighborhood. The appraiser is basically acting as a proxy for the government, checking to confirm the home meets rigorous minimum safety standards.
So they're looking for damage.
They ensure the structural components are totally sound and that essential systems are functional. If there is, say, peeling paint on a windowsill, a missing handrail on a basement staircase, or a roof that looks like it only has a few years left,
the FHA is going to flag it.
They will flag it. And the crucial detail is that those deficiencies often require repairs to be completed before the closing can even happen.
Oh man, that is a massive friction point. That means the seller usually has to hire a contractor to fix things while they still own the house, or you have to negotiate this really complex, stressful holdback of funds in escrow.
It creates significant logistical hurdles. The reason the FHA is so strict goes back to that insurance policy. If you default, the FHA is stuck holding the bag on that property.
They want an asset they can sell easily.
Right, an asset that is safe, sound, and instantly sellable, not some fixer-upper with hidden liabilities.
So an FHA appraiser is acting almost like an overprotective parent, walking through the house, making sure every single thing is baby-proofed and perfectly safe before they hand over the keys.
That's a great way to put it.
Whereas a conventional appraiser is basically just an accountant walking through with a clipboard, making sure the math checks out and the house is worth the money the bank is lending.
That captures the dynamic perfectly. Conventional appraisals focus primarily on market value and overall condition. They are generally much less concerned with minor cosmetic issues or deferred maintenance, as long as the home is fundamentally habitable.
And this difference has a massive impact depending on where you're trying to buy. The Jet Direct source points to highly competitive markets, specifically mentioning places like Long Island or Westchester County in New York.
In a seller's market where a homeowner has five offers on the table, they are purely looking for the path of least resistance.
Right. They don't want to fix a handrail.
Exactly. A seller will often view a conventional offer as far superior to an FHA offer, even if the purchase price is exactly the same. They know a conventional appraiser isn't going to hold up the sale demanding they scrape and repaint the garage or fix a wobbly porch step.
The bureaucratic hoops are just drastically lower.
So the loan type you choose actually dictates your negotiating power in a bidding war.
Wow. Okay, so you've survived the appraiser's clipboard, you've beat out the all-cash offers, and the house is finally yours. But the cost of that victory looks completely different over the next 30 years, depending on whose money you used.
Yes, let's dig into the math we hinted at earlier. This is the critical long-term differentiator. It all revolves around mortgage insurance.
Let's break down the acronyms, because there are two big ones here. We have PMI versus MIP. Starting with the conventional side, PMI, or private mortgage insurance.
Right. On a conventional loan, if you put down less than 20% of the home's purchase price, the lender considers you a slightly higher risk. To mitigate that risk, they require PMI.
So you pay a little extra every month.
You do.
Yeah.
But the crucial advantage of PMI is that it is temporary.
Oh, nice.
Once you pay down your loan balance or your home increases in value enough that you hit 20% equity, the PMI can typically be removed. It just drops off your monthly statement.
You prove you have enough skin in the game, the risk profile drops, and the bank removes the extra charge. You get to keep more of your money every month without having to restructure your entire financial life.
Exactly. Now, the FHA handles insurance very differently. They require MIP, which stands for Mortgage Insurance Premium, and it is a double hit.
A double hit.
Yeah. First, there is an upfront premium that gets rolled into the loan balance or paid at closing. Second, there's an ongoing monthly mortgage insurance charge.
And unlike the conventional loan where it magically falls off at 20% equity, FHA mortgage insurance doesn't just go away.
Under most FHA loan scenarios originated today, that monthly insurance premium remains in place for an extended period. And in many cases, it lasts for the entire life of the loan.
Wait, forever.
No matter how much equity you build, no matter how much the house appreciates in value, you keep paying that extra insurance to the government.
We need to explain why that is, because it sounds incredibly punitive. Why does the FHA force you to pay insurance forever?
We have to look back at the aftermath of the 2008 housing crash.
Oh, right.
During that crisis, the FHA took on massive financial water, defaults skyrocketed, and their insurance fund was severely depleted.
Yeah.
To ensure the long-term survival of the program without needing constant taxpayer bailouts, they fundamentally changed the rules.
They needed more cash in reserve.
Exactly. They realized they needed a permanent stream of premium income to cover future catastrophic losses. So for most modern FHA loans, that premium is locked in.
Let me put real numbers to this so people understand the gravity. If Sarah buys a $400,000 house using an FHA loan, her monthly mortgage insurance premium might be around $350 a month.
That's a realistic estimate, yeah.
Over 10 years, that is $42,000 of her wealth. Gone.
Poof.
It isn't building equity. It isn't paying down the principal of the house. It's just vanishing to the government to pay for the privilege of using those initial bumpers.
When you look at the math that way, you see why the accessibility of the FHA program is a double-edged sword.
So what does this all mean? The obvious play for Sarah is to use the FHA loan to secure the house, wait a couple of years for her credit to improve and the house to appreciate, and then just switch to a conventional loan to drop that expensive MIP.
That is a very common strategy. The JetDirect source materials detail what we can call the refinance pipeline.
The refinance pipeline.
Right. Homeowners intentionally begin with FHA financing to get their foot in the door when their savings are modest. Then, once their financial profile is stronger, they refinance out of the FHA loan and into a conventional loan, completely eliminating that permanent insurance.
Honestly, it sounds like a cheat code, but there has to be friction there, right?
Oh, there is significant friction. And we have to be careful not to treat refinancing like a magic risk-free button.
Because it's a new loan.
Exactly. Refinancing means taking out a brand new loan. That means paying closing costs all over again, which can be 2 to 5% of the loan amount.
Which is thousands of dollars.
Right. Furthermore, you are at the mercy of the broader economic environment. If interest rates have spiked since you bought the house, refinancing might actually increase your total monthly payment, even if you drop the mortgage insurance.
Oh, yeah.
And if the local housing market cools down and your property value dips, you might not have the equity required to qualify for the conventional loan anyway.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, choosing between these two loans isn't about looking at a spreadsheet and universally declaring one is good and the other is bad.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, it is about finding the tool that fits your specific timeline and risk tolerance.
Right.
When evaluating the initial loan, you have to calculate your total savings over time versus your break-even timelines. If you only plan to be in a starter home for 5 years before moving across the country, the permanent nature of FHA mortgage insurance might not matter to you at all.
Because you're going to sell the asset long before that monthly premium becomes a devastating financial drag. It comes down to understanding the utility of the tool you are holding. An FHA loan is an incredible, unparalleled tool for entry. It breaks down systemic barriers and creates access to wealth building for people who would otherwise be left out in the cold.
Yes.
But a conventional loan is the ultimate tool for long-term efficiency and cost control.
Your mortgage is basically the architecture of your equity strategy. It determines how easily you clear the initial hurdles, what your monthly lifestyle looks like, and how efficiently you transition your income into permanent wealth over time.
And navigating this architecture doesn't have to be something you do blindly with a pencil and a legal pad. The source material from JetDirect Mortgage highlights how modern lenders are trying to simplify this incredibly complex process.
They have some great tools for this.
Yeah, they mention their own mobile platform, JetDirect Mobile, as a way to evaluate these exact scenarios, compare the long-term math, and apply directly from your phone. It's a vital example of how the industry is trying to take this dense 30-year commitment and make it clear, precise, and manageable for the average buyer.
Having access to precise, localized tools is vital because the landscape is relentlessly shifting. Honestly, reading through the JetDirect data brought up a detail that raises an important question.
Uh-huh.
Something I think is worth chewing on long after this deep dive ends.
What caught your analytical eye?
It has to do with the concept of loan limits. Both FHA and conventional loans have strict federal dollar limits on exactly how much you are allowed to borrow.
Okay.
And those limits are determined down to the specific county the house is located in. They are updated annually by HUD and the FHFA. The source notes that high-cost areas, specifically pointing out Nassau and Suffolk counties in New York, have elevated limits to try and accommodate the massively expensive real estate environments there.
Well, that makes logical sense. A starter home in Suffolk County costs wildly more than a four-bedroom house in a rural town in the Midwest. The limits have to scale.
They attempt to scale. But here is this provocative thought to mull over. if your ability to even access a specific loan program to use those FHA bumpers or secure conventional efficiency is strictly capped by federal limits that vary by county.
Right.
In today's rapidly inflating economy, do these geographic loan limits actually keep pace with the real ground-level cost of living?
Oh, wow.
Or are buyers in high-cost areas increasingly being forced into loan structures that don't fit their needs or being pushed into hyper-expensive jumbo loans simply because their local housing market outpaced the federal government's annual updates?
Wow. That is a heavy structural question. Are the federal guidelines actually reflecting the lived reality of the neighborhood you're trying to buy into? Or are you fighting a bureaucratic map that is always three steps behind the actual market forces?
It's a critical dynamic to think about when you look at the price tags in your own specific neighborhood and compare them to your county's loan caps. The market moves at lightning speed, while federal policy moves very, very deliberately.
That is a brilliant point to leave off on. Next time you are sitting at that mahogany desk, hand cramping, staring at those mortgage documents, you aren't just looking at a stack of paper anymore.
You're really not.
You are looking at the rules of the game you are about to play for the next three decades. Whether you are rolling with the bumpers up or down, now you know exactly how the lane is oiled and what it's going to cost you to play. Keep asking the right questions. Keep examining the systems working underneath the surface, and we will see you on the next deep dive.